I'm Bae, and you're listening to Bae Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I watched the first three episodes of Peacemaker, HBO Max's Peacemaker, and I want to talk about it. But first, before recording, I was on Twitter. You know, I've been saying that I don't too much spend the same amount of time on Twitter as I used to anymore. But occasionally, you know, I do go through and I'm scrolling through. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of content from Facebook, but a whole lot of content from Instagram and TikTok on Twitter. So it's not abnormal to see a bunch of videos on my timeline anyhow, of Black creators doing something funny or stupid or talking about something, some heavy subject like the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Act that just was defeated by all Republicans and two Democrats. Yesterday, didn't even make it out of the house to go to the doggone Senate. And so, you know, I'm seeing all of that different stuff. Occasionally I am extremely moved by, a TikTok video. Actually, I think I'm more moved than not, by TikTok videos, which is why I just made my venture over to TikTok. That and my niece wanting to be connected, remain connected to my niece, or one of my nieces, I should say, the one that lives closest to me. Anyway, so I just started to pop on TikTok. Anyway, it tends to be more fun over there. But anyhow, I saw this video. I was scrolling not 20 minutes ago. Just scrolling on Twitter, and I actually it was less than 20 minutes ago, and I turned up on this video that somebody on my side of Black Twitter had posted, and I don't even remember what they said, but the video is from DJ Flatline Tay. DJ Flatline Tay. And basically, he's in the store. Like, I think the particular store that he's in the video that I just saw was Walmart. And anyway, so he's in the store in one of the aisles on the phone, and he is essentially having a conversation, you know, phone to ear. He's talking, and he's talking loudly. Well, not loudly, but he's clearly having a conversation with someone else. The thing that makes it hilarious is that the thing he's saying somehow or another resonates with the person that he's in close proximity to. Now, nobody has on any mask, so I don't even know if this is like something that came out within the last couple of years or wherever he is filming, they just wild and nobody has to wear masks. I think it's the former, not the latter, that this was years ago and we're just now discovering it because my. No, that's not true. There were masks involved. He didn't have no mask on, so they just out there. Gee, he just out here living life, huh? Anyway, or at least I saw one person a couple people in there with masks. So he's specifically just out there living life with no mask inside a store, which clearly has to be somewhere in the South, because if they're not chasing you out of the store without the mask, then it's got to be in the South, because everywhere up, at least everywhere on the Northeast, you have to have a mask on the inside or they're going to chase you. Northeast of the United States, I apologize for folks who are not in the United States, but in the Northeast, you have to wear your mask indoors. It's standard. And so anyway, wherever he is, it's like a suggestion. So he has to be in the South. But anyway, what he's saying resonates with the people that he's in close proximity to. And when I'm saying close proximity, I'm saying pre-COVID close proximity. So this is another thing where, like, it's funny, but, like, he's also kind of close to these folks. But anyway, so what is he saying? So he's on the phone saying like, so he was the first part of the clip. It's like 30 seconds, 30 to 60 seconds, something like that. The first scene in the clip, he's saying, oh, you need to put some weave in that. You need to put some weave in that. And right, resonated, it resonated with the woman he was closest to. And she turned around, and the joke is that she got a wig cap on. Or no, she got her hair in a snatchback. And if you black, you know what a snatchback is. And it's not, she clearly just ran to the store. And she in there getting a couple things. And I think the other part of the joke there is that her hair is in a snatchback and it's not looking full, and perhaps her edges need some attention. And so she turns around after the guy in the skit says, oh, you put some weave in that. Put some weave in that. She turns around and is, you know, about to clarify who he's talking to. And I don't remember if she audibly says anything, audibly says what, you know what I mean? And as a prelude to her trying to figure out who the heck he's talking to. And then he immediately interrupts and he says, oh, I'm on the phone. And she's like, oh, and then chuckles. And then that's the end of that particular scene. And yeah, the funny part, the funny part is not him. I'm not going to analyze that anyway. So that's the first part. The second scene is him. Oh, which one is it? Oh, basically he's saying derogatory things. He's basically saying like, at one point he's near this white guy and he said, how many bodies you got in your basement? Again, pretending he's on the phone. The white guy says, excuse me? And he's like, oh no, I'm on the phone. And then the guy laughs off, okay. And then he continues to shop. Again, they in the store. And I believe it's a Walmart. Something about it gives very much Walmart. And I can't remember if I saw, you know, the little gold Starburst looking sign that is Walmart's sign these days. Or not, but it feels like Walmart. And he's just going through all the aisles, essentially playing this prank on these people. There's one where he's in the aisle and there's these three young looking black guys. And he says something about them. He says something about, oh, y'all soft. And here's the other thing that makes it funny. So he's looking, it's like he's looking in their direction. He's also close in their proximity. And so all three of them turn around and they say, again, just like the first woman in the woman in the first skit, excuse what? And he's like, oh no, I'm on the phone. And they're like, oh, okay. And they laugh, turn around. They don't laugh. They turn around and go back to doing what they was doing. Cause you know, I don't know, the way of explaining it, it's not funny anymore. Cause it's like he's insulting people, but the way it plays out is, anyway, go watch the video. That's why you should never describe a joke. Cause it doesn't become funny anymore. It's not funny anymore. Ugh, anyway, I ruined it. Anyway, but I chuckled. I chuckled even though it was borderline. I'll say that. Well, it wasn't even borderline. He was insulting these people and then playing like he was on the phone. But the funny element of it was that the minute he said, oh no, I'm on the phone, all anger left the room and they went on about their business. And some even turned that anger into chuckling, or that pre-anger into chuckling, and then went on about their business. I guess that's the thing that makes it funny. Because I think we have all been, actually, this is the thing that makes it funny. We have all been in a place where we was not 2 seconds from getting off in somebody's behind if they were truly checking us, and turns out they weren't even talking to us. So, right. So anyway, I don't know. Anyway, it was funny. And now I've just described it, so it's no longer funny. So thanks a lot. Whatever. Moving on. So getting back to the one of the other things that I just said, that the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Act of 2022 did not pass. I'm in a place where I'm like numb to it. Like, we already know the routine. And one of the reasons why I've kind of left Twitter, like, I guess I'm not gone from Twitter, but like, I have moved on. I don't spend so much of my time there anymore, is because the sky is always falling for the people that are in my circle on Twitter. There's something about Twitter that brings the absolute worst. Now, keep in mind, TikTok is not any different. There's this one particular person that ends up on my For You page. He's Afro-Latino, and he spends a whole lot of time. He's queer. He identifies as queer, and he spends a whole lot of time making videos, mostly his videos when he's calling out something in the culture, whatever aspect of culture he's calling out, be it Latine culture and the erasure of Afro-Latinos or Afro-Latines. He's calling things out. My only problem with it is it's giving me Twitter vibes, which is hollering to holler. And that's not, I don't see myself as somebody who hollers to holler. Because there's a certain point that, again, one of the reasons why I left, well, I didn't even get to the point. One of the reasons why I'm not spending so much time on Twitter anymore is just because I have a whole lot of people in my friend group that the entire timeline is complaining, maybe a solution, complaining, maybe an opportunity to come together and collectively do something like tangible right now, complaining about a larger complex issue. And my philosophy is, it's okay to identify the larger complex issue, but my whole life is working in the community. So I am used to saying, okay, here's identifying a problem and trying to find community partners who do, you know, bring my resource to the table, and then find other people who are bringing other resources to the table and trying to do a thing. Now, we all know that the nonprofit world, and it's just lousy with people who are doing the bare minimum and getting all the money. Believe me, I don't want to give too many identifiers, but there are meetings that I attend where it is super apparent that people just throw money to some of the members in this group that I'm meeting in because of name recognition alone. And the product, baby, when I tell you it's bare minimum, I mean it. The product, the return on investment is bare minimum, but the name, the association with a few of these organizations is worth it to some of these funders, some of these people, these grantors. And so, you know, it's infuriating. So I understand the nonprofit world is very imperfect. But I also see for every organization that people throw money behind because they want proximity, they're buying proximity. There are a number of different other organizations, even in this particular group, there are way many more organizations that are like doing the Lord's work for real. And there's a huge return on investment, and they're getting, because of their proximity to some other organizations, they're able to get a spotlight on them. And so they are enjoying some attention, which also allows them to get some more, the attention of folks who can give them some more money. So it's not all bad, but it's a treacherous world that we live in the serving side of things, because it's too easy to do the bare minimum and get the most. Depending on your proximity to a well-known organization, or if you are that well-known organization. So anyway, I understand that nonprofit is imperfect, but I'm so used to just banding together and figuring this thing out. And that sucks. I'm not used. I've grown into becoming the person that is like, if it happens through the legislature, awesome. I will absolutely advocate with my legislators, my elected officials, I will absolutely advocate. But I'm not finna stand here and hold my breath because y'all be playing. As evidenced by the voting rights bill, what do we know? So all Republicans, all Senate Republicans and two Senate Democrats vetoed or voted against. I don't know that they voted against, but it's a filibuster against the voting rights, this recent Voting Rights Act. And so it failed as a result for lack of the votes, it failed. And it was a procedural reason why it failed too, because of the filibuster. And so, I was reading, I think it was The Economist. There are like a million articles. There are a million articles about it, but one of the articles that I read, and I apologize, I can't quote, I think it was from in The Economist, but whatever the article I was reading from a renowned news periodical was, or stated that many of the same Republicans, there was a voting rights bill that passed in 2006 that had overwhelming bipartisan support. And it was all about improving access to voting, restoring voting rights to people who had been previously disenfranchised and to make it easier for folks to participate in the voting process. Many of those same, or at least a handful of those same Republican voters who voted for that back in 2006 are still in Congress and voted against the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Act this week. And so the article was talking about, or it was kind of diagnosing the why behind the vote. Why did you vote for improved voting measures in 2006, but against them in 2022? And so it was diagnosing all of that. And if I remember to find the article, I will share it with you. But I think it takes a backseat to what we all know. Like, I don't think anybody that listens to this series or just a regular human being who pays attention to the local news, the national news. And when I'm saying this, I'm not just talking about the US, I'm literally talking about the UK. I'm talking about wherever you are listening from this, Australia, on the continent of Africa. We all get that in many times, a lot of the movement isn't happening in the political sphere. It's usually any legislation that's passed is a symptom of what has already been happening on the ground. Right. And this huge desire to push the culture forward, to push legislation, to push the culture forward, and the legislation plays catch up. We get that. Right. We get it. So I'm not surprised by this, because I'm sure that there's a lot of grandstanding in other governments and their politics. It feels like Canada, I guess I'm paying attention, because I went to Toronto, I'm paying more attention to Canadian politics, you know, just a little bit more than I had been in the past. And it's clear, you know how when you focus on your own little circle, that it feels as if the issues that are plaguing your own little circle only impact y'all and nobody else is really dealing with that. So what we know is, globally speaking, all governments are grappling back and forth with, you know, grandstanding and playing the game just to stay relevant, but like doing the bare minimum. Like, everybody's grappling with that. I think I'm still tripping over the fact that Toronto is just as racist as the United States. They are not just as racist, but like probably. Especially in TV. I'm still tripping over how many brown people were in Toronto, and you don't see none of that for real on TV. Anyway, most of the folks that you see on TV are not brown. Like, not even a little bit. Not any shade, but if they are, it's like a hint. of brown. It's just interesting to me, but that's not unlike the United States. I don't know why I thought Canada would be different. But anyway, and I think that's why I'm looking at Canada with a different lens now, because I believe the hype up until this point. I truly believe the hype like a dummy up until this point, because I think I wanted Canada to be so different than the United States, because I've just grown tired. And as I've aged, just grown a little tired of the okie doke. And right now it feels like the okie doke. And I'm not saying all of this. Like, I want to keep this episode a little more upbeat. So I'm going to stop. I'm not going to go any further in the conversation about the failed legislation. It's just the other part of this is, politicians are going to be politicians, and they're going to play their game. And we're in a two-party system right now, largely two-party system. And I'm just not super enthusiastic or super confident that the leadership and power at the moment are really going to do anything substantive to really push things forward. Like, there have been a few things that have been done, but that's like the bare minimum. And you're not going to get no standing ovation for doing the bare minimum. Like, that shouldn't happen in your normal life, and it should not happen on a national stage. You don't get no kudos. Like, we should have been had masks. We should have been had tests sent to us before there was before there were even vaccines. We should have been there. I understand it was a completely different administration, but like, this is like basic. It's like real, real basic. Also, the masks, like, why isn't every household shipped masks on a regular basis? Like, why we got to go out here like the Hunger Games and figure out what does it say? What's real and what's fugazi in the mask world? Like, I've never had to pay so much attention to determine what the heck an actual N95 mask was and was not. Like, anyway, I'm finna be off this, but it's just, I'm not finna applaud nobody for doing the bare minimum. And also, I'm not super surprised that this voting rights bill didn't pass, which is why we've got to be more vigilant and proactive in making sure that everybody is registered to participate in the electoral process, if they want to, or the voting process if they want to, and that they're educated, because that's about the best we're going to be able to do, given the circumstance, because the politicians can't be trusted to get it done right now. Anyway, yeah, that was a wild take. Very hot take on this release day. Anyway, moving on. But I think I've shared over the last couple of years, I'm into Marvel movies because of my husband. Superheroes and stuff is cool, but I'm more into the sci-fi stuff. Like, and I understand that there's comic books have sci-fi elements there. Like, it's all science fiction. It's just a branch of science fiction. I understand that. But comics have never been super appealing to me, except for X-Men, and only because of Storm being black. And I really liked Gambit. And I know that's not Marvel. Just hear me out, all right? And I liked Gambit because I thought he was cool. And I really thought Rogue, like, they played Rogue, and like the portrayal of Rogue in the comic books versus the portrayal of Rogue in the movies is a marked difference. And it's a trifling one at that. Besides, I'm not the biggest fan of Anna Paquin. Like, I do not enjoy her acting. And so to put her in a character that, to have her portray a character that I didn't think was sorry, but like, she could have been so much cooler because she was kind of cool. She wasn't Storm cool or Gambit cool, but she was like, all right, in the comics. But then to make her like milquetoast was a little womp womp. So anyway, so like I've watched the movies, but I can't say that I'm waiting for releases. Until hubby got me like into the DC universe. And for the first time, like X-Men is DC, right? And the Avengers is Marvel. Yeah. I don't know. Listen, charge it to my brain, not my heart. I'm hanging on by a thread when it comes to understanding the superhero world, okay? So just know that, okay? And I will listen to whomever for a short period of time try to explain to me the difference between. I will do it. Hubby understands the routine. He understands. And so he don't spend too much time explaining the differences. He just helps me to know what character names are who and what they do. I won't further aggravate him by confusing their powers and how they got them. He's come to the point where he not finna let me do that. He not finna let me steal his joy, right? With not knowing that information. But anyway, I'm doing my best here for having barely looked into it, okay? If that makes any sense to you. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful. It's just I can't muster up too much more energy in understanding the nuances because that's not my bag. But I appreciate other people who do, because boy, do I go on things that are boring to other people. So I get it. All right. Let's just be cool. Anyway. I'm more into them, which is saying a lot, but not maybe saying much for like hardcore fans, because of my husband. I'm more into them now. And I will say that I actually anticipated Venom number 2, but it was because of Tom Hardy. But I still anticipated, okay, watching the second film, and I did, and it was awesome. We watched it in the theaters. It was great. Amen. Okay. We talked about it, or I talked about it on the show. I was very enthusiastic. So anyway, but I can't say that I was like tripping hard to watch the Avengers. I'm not finna do that. I am excited about Black Panther 2. Okay. You know, I'm finna watch that. So, you know, I got all my piggies on my right toe, on my right foot, you know, in there. You know, and I'm pulling the left slowly. I got my big toe on the left into the world, but I'm just not eager to jump all the way in. Anyhow, so I'm getting in the groove and I'm kind of understanding who's who. Like, obviously, I know who Batman is. Obviously, I know who Joker is. I'm switching back to DC now. See, I know I think I'm getting the handle of the difference. Anyway, I'm switching back to DC and I know who Harley Quinn is, largely because of Margot. That's not true. Margot Robbie. I knew about Harley Quinn before because there was a cartoon whose name I can't remember. But anyway, it had Joker and Batman and Harley Quinn in there when she was in black and red. And I remember her having a New Jersey sounding accent to me. It was a New Jersey sounding accent. And I remember her being like wild. And her and Joker being in love. Like, I remember that story. I remember thinking that was toxic, but not having the language to say toxic when I was first exposed to it as a child. But I remember that relationship. And I remember that cartoon that was a cartoon, but it wasn't very funny. And I was looking for funny as a child. So I really didn't too much watch it, but I watched it enough to know what was going on. I knew Joker was the bad guy. I knew Harley was quote unquote a bad guy too. And that Bruce Wayne, aka Batman, was supposed to be quote unquote the good guy. And so I understood that back and forth. It was just, that storyline was too boring to me because at the end of the day, and I'm only able to articulate this now because I have the language to use, but I never really liked Batman because it was a rich white man being a vigilante, and that never sat well with me. A rich white man playing judge and jury, so much so that the police have to rely on this rich white man to be able to catch the quote unquote bad guys. Like, it never really sat well with me. I was never super interested in that. Give me somebody that actually has superpowers. You know, give me somebody like a Storm, who I've learned over the years is an Omega mutant.
and has like, Omega means you got like next level. You that deal. You know what I mean? Like big dog powers. And anyway, Storm got big dog powers. And you mean to tell me we don't have her, Storm don't have her own movie? That's trifling. But anyway. So I kind of got the hang of it, but you know, I had never heard of the Suicide Squad, and I'm guessing I've never heard of it because it's like a late 90s, early 2000s addition to the DC world of the DC universe. And so I'm not familiar with all the characters that were in, Suicide Squad, other than Joker and Harley. Like, who the heck was Deadshot? And all the other people, I only know Deadshot because it was Will Smith. And I was introduced to the character named Deadshot from Suicide Squad. And I only watched Suicide Squad because I heard all the antics that Jared Leto was doing to be Joker, and I actually thought it was a cool interpretation of Joker. I know people hated it, but like, Joker was, I've said this before, and don't let get, I'm gonna stop it, just as, I'm gonna stop it in a second, but like, Joker stayed flashy. Joker dressed. Joker knew how to dress. He looked good. But he was wild and was, is totally criminally negligent. That's not the right term. What am I saying? Because I don't want to use the term that everybody, it's a pejorative against folks living with mental health conditions. This, and I don't want to use a medical condition, a clinical condition to describe them. This dude was unhinged. Dude was unhinged and just creating mayhem because it was Tuesday. And so, you know, I was drawn to the drama behind people being mad that Jared Leto's interpretation of Joker and the director's interpretation of Joker, whose name is just gone from me right now. But then also the antics that Jared Leto would pull behind the scenes with his co-stars that made it weird. And then also, strangely, I learned in over the years, does Jared Leto have a cult? Like, people are saying he has a cult. And I don't know if that's just people making that's an indictment on him having an open relationship or being in a polyamorous relationship, or if it's like, no, he for real got a cult, like for realsies. I don't know. And I'm not finna look into it. But anyway, so why be slanderous? I don't know. Anyway, let me move on. So blah, blah, blah. That's why I watched Suicide Squad. And it was okay. It just didn't really move me. And then Suicide Squad 2 comes out, and it's on HBO Max. I have HBO Max, so hubby and I watch it. And P.S., he's not really into the DC. He's Marvel. He watched DC, but he's into Marvel. Anyhow, Well, except for, no, I take that back, because he was super into Batman versus Superman. I was about to say Spider-Man. Anyway, he was into that, but he's more into Marvel. Anyway, so where was I going? Oh, anyway, we were watching Suicide Squad 2 because we was home and it was on HBO Max, so it was cool. And I was like, oh, Idris Elba, duh, love him. And then, you know, Flag. One of them is the wrestler and one of them is a comic book person. Whichever one is the comic book person. Anyway, he was in there and I'm like, oh, here we go. Another, like, I was not moved by his character. I'm being for real. I was not moved by his character in the first Suicide Squad. I'm knocking stuff over. I wasn't moved by his character in the first Suicide Squad, and I wasn't super moved by his character in the second one. I was there for Idris. Anyway, but I stayed because the story was interesting and Idris. And then here comes Peacemaker, another vigilante white guy dressed in a superhero costume, has no superpowers to speak of, but just shoots people dead, and got the nerve to have a daggone dove with an olive branch. Is it an olive branch? Anyway, a dove with an olive branch on his chest. And of course, he's in red, white, and blue because duh. Anyway, but I was interested in his character because it was John Cena and it was funny. And like, it was funny. John Cena is a funny person. I know about John Cena because hubby watches wrestling. And John Cena wrestled. John Cena wrestled. Anyway, so that's how I know John Cena. And he's funny. So I was like, yay. Okay, cool. This is entertaining. And then it appears that he dies in the movie. So I'm like, okay, well, that's over. And then it was just Idris and another character. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, that's the end of that. And no, it wasn't. There's an episode. There's a whole, Peacemaker got his own series. And I'm like, really? But it turns out that there's a reason why he got his own series. And yeah, it's funny. It's funny. And there's some there. And again, this is me talking about this completely with no respect because I've never read any of the comic books. So I'm quite sure that in the comics, he has a whole backstory and all of that that I never knew that I guess I'm exploring aspects of the backstory through this series, this HBO Max series. So, yeah, I've watched the first three episodes and I want to talk about it. I'm going to be honest with you. Because I thought it was, again, another vigilante white man. And why am I watching? Why am I giving him any time, even though it's John Cena and I think he's funny? It's because Daniel Brooks is in it. And I'm like, okay, well, Daniel Brooks is in it. Let me give it a shot. Because she's funny and I love her. And she's brown. And I'm hoping, brown skin. And I'm hoping, you know, that there's some substance to her character. And so that's why I watched it. I was giving it a shot to see how they was going to treat my girl, Danielle Brooks. And so I'm not disappointed. So in the next segment, I'm going to talk all about, as best I can, what I know about the Peacemaker series and the first three episodes. Okay, so Peacemaker, a 2022 superhero series, which is in its first season, which premiered and is playing on HBO Max. What do I want to do first? Okay, so it stars John Cena, who I've already mentioned, Danielle Brooks, who I've already mentioned, Freddie Stoma. Oh, well, hold on. John Cena as Peacemaker, Danielle Brooks as what is her name? Leota Adebayo, who is a part of a clandestine team that is under the direction of a shady dude named Clemson Mearn, who's played by Chukwudi Iwuji, who I feel like I've seen him before, but I can't place where I've seen him. But anyway, so Leota Adebayo is a part of this group. She's a new member, a part of this clandestine group that is charged with working with Peacemaker to like do stuff. Anyway, and then Freddie Stroma, who plays Vigilante, who is apparently a character in the universe, which one? Marvel? DC? Marvel. Let's go with Marvel. I don't know. Anyway, because now I'm confused. Anyway, he's another superhero or vigilante who... He's a vigilante who likes killing people just like Peacemaker. Anyway, and there's actually a moment where they have a little dialogue about that and come to the conclusion that, yes, Peacemaker, you see yourself as a good guy fighting for truth and justice, but you really just thrive on killing people, especially people you seem to be unworthy. Anyway, so Freddie Stroma plays Vigilante, and he's Peacemaker's best friend. I've already talked about Chuck Woody, Clemson. In the film, Clemson Mern, Jennifer Holland, Jennifer Holland plays Emilia Harcourt, who was also a part of the same clandestine team that that Leota Adebayo is in. And she's obviously turning out to be, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but she's turning out to be something like a love interest, I think, maybe, for Peacemaker. Steve Aggie is a tech nerd on the team. Yep. And Robert Patrick, whom you've seen, you may remember, or may be best known as the police dude. Oh, shoot. I'm not even doing it right. Anyway, the police dude in the Terminators, the one that was chasing after Arnold and the people. It's been a long time since I've seen the movie. But anyway, I remember him from Terminator. He's in this thing. And boy, is he ever playing a racist old white man very well. And so Patrick Smith plays Aggie. Wait, Robert Patrick plays Aggie Smith. Aggie Smith is Peacemaker's father. And what we learn very quickly is the tech that Peacemaker uses comes from his father, Aggie Smith. There are three episodes out. Like I said, I'm going to talk through the first three episodes. The genre is action comedy dramedy and superhero stuff. First episode aired January 13th. And it currently has an 8.4 out of 10. On IMDb, 94% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, and 87% of Google users enjoy this TV show, of which I am one. Let me read some of the reviews from Rotten Tomatoes. So again, 94% average tomato meter reading, so it's fresh. An average audience score of 85. Now, you know that the critic score and the audience scores sometimes differ, so, you know, we get it. Let me get into the series. Okay, you're not going to tell me nothing, huh? All right, I usually hear a summary, but I guess it's still early days. And that's why we're not too much hearing what folks are talking about. So the synopsis, in case you don't know, or you don't care to look up, and I get that. A man fights for peace at any cost, no matter how many people he has to kill to get it. Now, it's interesting that in this description, it says a man, because again, Peacemaker doesn't have any powers. He just shoots people to death. That's his power. His power is he shoots people to death in a red, white, and blue costume. Now, mind you, it's mostly red and white, which I'm sure there's some symbolism there somewhere. And then a blue belt with a mask on. And the mask is like, I think for me, the funniest thing about the daggone mask is that it's a shiny silver mask. So it's almost like his head is fashioned into something like a bullet. I don't know. That's just my take. Anyway, but it's just interesting that it says a man fights for peace at any cost because he ain't no superhero. Anyway, and maybe that's what DC is about. They don't really do too much. Actually, if I'm thinking about it, apart from X-Men, everybody else in the DC universe, don't nobody have no powers. They're just criminals or supposedly do-gooders and they just be doing stuff. They be killing. Actually, everybody. Ooh, DC be killing people like all the time. Like all the time. Ooh, I just noticed that. DC be killing people all the time. Marvel be like trying to save the world. DC be just like, man, whatever. It's about my block. This city is corrupt. Let me go shoot some people. Basically, anyway, I don't know. What else do I want to say about this thing? I really, you know, the other thing that I really actually, yeah, it's only 3 episodes out. Yeah, the first 3 episodes out. Did I watch the 4th too? I think I might have watched the 4th, but I'm only going to talk about the first 3 because I can't remember what the 4th one was. Anyway, I think the other thing that I want to say about this is when you look up the cast, it's kind of shady how they have the cast arranged. It's certainly not of importance on the screen. It's certainly like some biased opinion of who should be casted first, because Danielle Brooks, I find to be a pretty freaking important character in this whole thing because of her proximity to Amanda Waller, who is the big bad in all of the Suicide Squad movies that I've seen. The 2 movies, she is the big bad. And actually, I remember being introduced to Amanda Waller when I first watched the animated series of Black Panther. She was voiced by Alfre Woodard. Do you remember what I'm talking about? It was on BET. It was an animated series on BET. That was where I was first introduced to the White Wolf, first introduced to Steve Rogers, because I'm sure I'd heard of Iron Man before or Captain America before. I didn't realize like his name. And so anyway, my first introduction to Amanda Waller was that animated series that I watched on BET. On TV, but I think it's on their YouTube channel now, or you could probably bootleg it and find it and by other means. But anyway, that was my introduction to Black Panther and Amanda Waller, and she was bad. And it was very clear from the very beginning, this was not a woman that you wanted to mess with, that she looked, it felt like she was fashioned behind Condoleezza Rice at the time, because, you know, it was the Bush administration. Well, was it the Bush administration? Yeah, it was the Bush administration at the time. Anyway, that was in power, and Condoleezza was all up in there. Anyway, so yeah, I could definitely remember thinking that the character of Amanda Waller looked a heck of a lot like, or feel like it was fashioned after Condoleezza Rice. And so she was scary. I just saw her as a scary woman. And so to have Viola Davis portray her in the Suicide Squad shows, man, Viola, first off, everybody knows Viola can act her tail off. Like, she been acting. But no, she's really good, because I don't think she overdoes it. I think there's this dead eye thing that she does. Is it dead? No. It's not that her eyes are dead. It's that there's a soullessness that she can portray in her eyes as Amanda Waller that does the trick for me. Because again, remember, I was terrified of Amanda Waller, the cartoon character, because she was creepy and felt like she would order somebody's death at the drop of a hat because it was Wednesday and she was bored. So anyway, blah, 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 Amanda Waller. Anyway, getting back to Danielle Brooks and her character, like, if you Google this, like, I do not like the placement. Like, first off, Peacemaker is John Cena plays the titular character for the whole series, and he listed behind his love interest, Jennifer Holland, the actress Jennifer Holland, who plays Amelia Harcourt. Like, what? John Cena should be listed first. And I'm not saying that Danielle Brooks should be, like, number 2, but, like, she definitely shouldn't be number 5, which is where she's listed. And Robert Patrick actually should not be number 6, where he's listed. It's really weird. And then also, like, Chuck Woody Iwuju, he should be up here. Anyway, I don't understand who arranges these things, and I'm not even going to trip about it anymore. It's just interesting. It's very clear that the arranging of the cast list when you're putting things up on Google is like super subjective. Because what? Anyway, so yeah, that's the last thing I want to say about that. Let me hasten on and talk about the show itself. Okay. So spoiler alert, if you have not watched the second Suicide Squad, I probably been spoiled this, but Peacemaker is shot in the neck by Idris Elba's character because they're both like super marksmen. But Idris just got the drop on him a little bit better. And anyway, shoots Peacemaker in the neck and Peacemaker goes down and everybody thinks that he's dead. Well, the series opens up and he's not dead. He's laid up in a hospital and apparently he's been convalescing for a period of time because while the wound that he received at the hands of Idris's character was not a mortal wound, it was certainly life-threatening. And so he had to spend some time convalescing in the hospital. And this is where we see him and we're introduced to him in the series as he's being discharged from the hospital because he's healed and he's ready to go. And so remember, everybody that was drafted into Suicide Squad, including Peacemaker, were drafted with the idea that if they work for Amanda Waller, they would cut off some of their life sentence. That's how Amanda got them. They were all in one place in prison. And so that's how she conscripted them into being a part of her Suicide Squad, because they had the chance of not dying in prison, but probably dying in the line of battle. And these folks chose dying in the line of battle because they were not doing anything else. And so technically Peacemaker, and he says as much, is not free to go, but rather should be free to go back to jail or to prison. But there's nobody there to take him. And after much consternation and some trips to ticks, some antics. I was trying to find the right word, but I couldn't find it. Anyway, after some antics to get himself freed from the hospital, even though he's not under surveillance, he's not being surveilled, he spirits away and ends up at his father's house. Well, what we come to know is his father's house. And this is where we're introduced to him and realize that this character is fashioned very much, and again, I've not read any of the series, the comic books, so I didn't know that Peacemaker's father, although kind of stands to reason given he's a vigilante. Well, not that a vigilante is this way, but like, you know, that Augie is like uber racist, not necessarily political, but like racist and a white supremacist. And throughout the series, he says some racist, very white supremacist stuff, like racist, but like TV show racist. I think there's a police officer, there's an occasion, the police have an occasion to be at, or no, not the police, the FBI has an occasion to send two of their agents to his front door for one reason or the next. And Augie, when confronted with an Asian woman and a white guy, turns to the Asian woman and said, I won't talk to you, but I'll talk to him. And then she says, why won't you talk to me? And he says something racist, I don't enjoy egg. What did he say? It wasn't egg foo young. What is it? Wontons? what was it? No, egg rolls. He said something. He's like, I don't enjoy egg rolls, if you know what I mean. And I'm like, ugh, woof. Anyway, so let me just finish talking about his character before I move on. So long story short, to further drive the point home, the dude is like uber white nationalist. So there's a point in which he's arrested. Something happens and he's arrested. And he's thrown in jail waiting to be transferred to another facility. And in this facility where he's being held, long story short, all the white people in this cell or in this area know him and start saluting him and say, "Hail," whatever his name is. And right, so it's like, So I'm interested. Well, am I interested? His character is going to be interesting, or the turn in his the development of what his character faces is going to be interesting. And I'm quite sure it's setting up for a showdown with Peacemaker, because Peacemaker feels different than his father. Also feels like he's trying to, I have some jewelry on my locket. I'm like preoccupied with making sure that it doesn't come off, because I keep losing these things. Because my locks are pencil size. And I don't know if you can hear me scraping it on. But my locks are pencil size. And I like to adorn them with jewels and little trinkets, because I'm too scared to dye them, because I think they'll fall out of my head. Anyway, but these trinkets are falling off my locks instead. So I need to secure them differently. I think... Again, I have never read the comic book, so I don't know. But the show is definitely setting up a marked difference between Peacemaker and his father, Augie. And so the biggest extreme is make him a white nationalist leader in prison, which feels like a trope, but here we are. And then let's watch Peacemaker find himself again. Not necessarily divest from his father. Excuse me, although I think that's coming. But let's show him grow and expand and open up his world as he's trying to find his new way in life now that he's not in prison, and now that he's not under the gun of the Suicide Squad, although technically it kind of is, because, by the way, remember when all of these folks agreed to work for Amanda, they were all given a chip that if you only push the button, their head would explode. So he still has that chip in him. That's not been removed. There's only so much he can do to rid himself of his own past, because he's still very much in contact and under contract, as it were, I guess, of Amanda Waller and this clandestine team that she has set up. I don't know. Anyway, that she's organized to take down some other shady people. Anyway, but so here's the setup. So that's the setup is coming. And actually it began in the first three episodes with, first off, Peacemaker actually has a freaking eagle as a pet, and he calls him Eagly, which is whatever. And the dad then gives him a hug in the first, after he greets him at his father's house, because Eagly's just been hanging out at his daddy's house, because he didn't know where else to go, and blah, blah, blah. So there's a moment where the eagle absolutely actually hugs Peacemaker, which, okay. Anyway, and so starts his transformation, I guess, that we're going to see throughout the series. And what else can I say? So when we are introduced to
Danielle Brooks's character, which, let me get her name again, because let me just get it in my soul. Leota. When we are introduced to Leota and we get to know her, there's a point where... Ooh, do I want to spoil this? Okay, spoiler. Danielle, everybody keeps asking why Danielle's on this team. For the first episode, they're checking Danielle to see, by they I mean the clandestine team that it was talked about, that Danielle's a part, that's headed by, oh my gosh. So the team is headed by Clemson, which includes Amelia and John, Economist is his name. Steve Aggie plays John Economist. It also includes... Yeah, that's it. That's the main team for the most part. Amelia, Peacemaker, Leota, Clemson, and John. And Jennifer and Aggie are asking, how the heck did she get on the team? Clemson is in the room, but he's not necessarily asking it. And she keeps saying, I got here on my own merit and all of that stuff. But the reason why they're asking her how she got into the room is because she keeps defending, or on the team, is because she keeps defending Amanda Waller. Now, the team, including Clemson, thinks that Amanda has punished them for basically insubordination. Remember, at the end of Peacemaker, or not Peacemaker, but at the end of Suicide Squad 2, the only reason why her team, Amanda Waller's team, knocks her out, and that's how the heroes are able to save the day, basically. The Suicide Squad become the heroes and save the day, is because they knocked Amanda Waller out, because she was about to kill all of them. She was about to hit the button. Again, remember, they all have this kill switch implanted in them, that all Amanda has to do is push a button, and one by one, she could explode their heads. Excuse me. So she threatened to do that when she wanted them to leave and allow the situation to play out, which would have meant more destruction for humankind. And so they decide that they're not going to do that. And then somebody from Amanda's team bops her over the head. And anyway, so this team that Leota finds herself a part of believes wholeheartedly that Amanda's trying to get back at them for insubordination from before. And Leota keeps defending her, which leads and keeps saying, no, that's not it. She's not trying to punish y'all. That's not it. She's not trying to punish us. To which Amelia is like, friend or foe, basically. She like G-checks her and says friend or foe. Like, she wasn't that cool. But you get what I mean. She pulls her up and is like, how did you get on this team? To which she says, oh, I'm just that nice with my marksmanship skills and intel gathering skills too. So blah, blah, blah. Like, she successfully defends her challenge against her being on the team like several times. But what we learn at the end of the first episode is there's a reason. Well, at least the concern of the teammates is valid, because while Leota does not have bad intentions, she is something like a spy to Amanda. Because Amanda is her mama. And so she's a spy in that your mama asks what's up and you tell her. But she genuinely is enjoying this work. But she's also just trying to bide her time until she can do something else. And so it'll be interesting to understand her story, learn her story too, because in the first episode, we kind of get a setup that Leota and Peacemaker are going to form a friendship, some sort of bond. They're going to bond for some sort of reason. And that bonding begins to happen in the beginning, mostly because they're kind of both awkward.
Leota is uber awkward because she's the new kid on the block and she's trying to hide the fact that Amanda Waller is her mama. But at the same time, she's also trying to fit in as a capable team member to prove to herself that she's a capable team member. Peacemaker is, again, also trying to fit back into society, also trying to justify his reason for being on the team himself. And so also grappling with some existential questions, clearly, in the very first episode, shoot, the second episode even. This dude is like having an existential crisis, which if you had a father that he has, I could see why. And then if you spent the bulk of your life like fighting, quote unquote, for peace and justice, and you've been killing people, and then you've spent the last, 6 months or whatever in a very treacherous situation, at the end of which, or the last year, in a situation that on the one hand endangered your life, and on the second hand, you spent a lot of time in the hospital because you almost lost your life. So, you know, he comes home and is trying to figure out who the heck he is, recognizing that he doesn't have a great relationship with his father, also recognizing that he doesn't have a ton of friends and his teammates don't really like him. And you get the sense that he wants to be liked. And so, which is also a fine point, like at his lowest point where he's dealing with this crisis, Vigilante, again played by Freddie Stroma, enters the picture and comes in, and actually comes in as the friend that he needs to be. And then we learn that Peacemaker really does have, I keep yawning and there's nothing I can do about it, just go with it. He does have a friend. He has a friend in Vigilante who happens to be a killer, who will kill at the drop of a hat for the slightest infraction, because again, he's a vigilante and he's making his own rules. But anyway, so his friend cheers him up and really has his back, which there's a metaphor there too, but, anyway, so they have this moment, but nevertheless, you still walk away from the second episode, because at this point I'm jumping all over the place. But if the first episode was Peacemaker getting out and us getting to know the team and us getting to know, set up the big bads, which turns out they want Amanda Waller to be the big bad, but it's actually going to be Peacemaker's dad, Augie, who's going to end up being the big bad. Episode two, we get to Peacemaker is settling in and he's trying to fit into the team, but he's also just generally, this is where he has his breakdown, his existential breakdown, but it's shortened by Vigilante's entrance, and Vigilante begins to help him pick up from the bottom where he was having that meltdown. And then in the third episode, we're not plateauing, but like we're about to press the accelerator button and learn more about why the team has been assembled and what they're about to be up against. Like we're not introduced exactly to it. What we know is that Peacemaker was attacked by something that was called a butterfly, and in trying to get out of a sticky situation that the butterfly put him in, and the butterfly is a person, he picks up this alien technology that I'm quite sure will have an impact on the upcoming episodes. Which will probably truly introduce. So again, Augie is a big bad, is the big bad. But I think there's going to be, I mean, it's Suicide Squad. So Suicide Squad, what would a Suicide Squad type spinoff be without some sort of alien intervention or alien interaction and showdown? And so there's already alien technology that's been introduced at this point. So we get the sense that there's going to be a little bit more to the story. These first episodes have been very funny, but also kind of slow because it's obviously it's building up to something. But let me tell you why it's been super funny. So throughout the first three episodes, the writers plus John Cena's delivery as Peacemaker of this content has been hilarious. So you get the sense that obviously you want, where they're setting up Augie, Peacemaker's dad, to be this big bad white supremacist. But you're also getting, you're seeing Peacemaker genuinely striving to be a new person, a different person. And there's a scene in the when he's leaving, when he's trying to get out of the hospital, where he has an interaction with a janitor who is South Asian, and he's South Asian, and basically the guy pulls him up and is like, you know, you think you're this hot shot person that, first off, I've never heard of you. What kind of name is Peacemaker? Second off, you think you the hot stuff? How come you only kill brown people? And Peace, to which Peacemaker answers, you know, I'm an equal opportunity killer, essentially, is what he's saying. And then the janitor is like, well, why don't you pay more attention so that you can catch? He's like, I catch bad guys, and he's like, well, why don't you pay attention to white people more so you can catch them doing bad deeds more often, because you're not really doing that. You too busy paying attention to the brown ones only. And he accepts the criticism. He accepts the critique. He accepts the note in that moment. And I just thought it was funny because that exchange was funny and it was also true. And then in the second episode, when Peacemaker is having that existential crisis moment and he's breaking down and Vigilante comes just when he needs him, there's this weird moment where Peacemaker thinks that Vigilante is going to play a trick on him involving his genitals, and Louis C.K. comes up, and they have a whole bit about Louis C.K. unwantingly showing his private parts to Webb, just unknowing. I don't even think they went even that far. They literally just said, they spent like 2 minutes talking about Louis C.K. being a creep, which was hilarious. You gotta watch it. It was hilarious. And then what was there another? I guess the jokes, again, it's kind of been slow because they're doing all this setup. But again, we're seeing Peacemaker transform. And again, there's going to be a showdown between Peacemaker and his father, Augie, right? But there are going to be other showdowns too. But to make the showdown between Augie and Peacemaker more satisfying, you have to show them growing as the polar opposites of each other. And they're doing that. Augie goes to prison and is hailed as the White Knight? I think they call him the White Knight. And they're like giving them the Nazi salute. And so put that next to Peacemaker growing and changing growing and changing and learning to be a better human, while also still having a penchant for killing people. It's going to be interesting to see that juxtaposition and to see them face off at some point. I'm wondering if it'll be like episode 10 where they have this gigantic face off. But in the meantime, aliens. Anyway, the storyline is about as wild and convoluted at times as Suicide Squad the show, but I think that's why people come, you know what I mean? I think people come for this type of movie or this type of show for the multiple storylines, for the way that the storylines kind of are all intertwined and how they wrap up at the end of the thing. And so in this instance, it'll be the end of the series, and obviously there'll be a series two, because come on. I think the timing of this thing, taking a step back, I think the timing of this thing and how it's coming out, it makes sense because Disney Plus has had all this success with their What If series. I don't even know if it's What If, but their series with all like Loki and, no,
Loki, not Loki, but Loki. And Boba Fett. And which there's some pretty men in there. I gotta watch that. Anyway, and all their comic book superhero and sci-fi stuff. It stands to reason that HBO Max would dip its toe into it, buy DC, or at least buy the rights to make spinoffs. Buy the rights to make spinoffs and enjoy some of the success that Disney Plus is getting. I'm never buying Disney Plus. The only way I'm going to watch any of those shows is if I watch somebody else's, I log into somebody else's account. But I already have HBO Max, so I'm going to watch this. And I'm glad that it's not disappointing to this point. Yeah, I'm eager to see Peacemaker's growth, eager to see Leota's growth. I'm really interested in those two characters growing and twisting and changing and their budding friendship. I'm just genuinely interested to see where the show is going to take us, because it's already been kind of a wild ride in the first three episodes anyway. So I don't think I'll talk any more about it, because I don't want to. I've already spoiled enough about the series. You should definitely watch it. Like I said, we're up to episode 4 by now. Next week starts episode 5. So you still got a lot. You still got time to play catch up. Yeah, you've got time to play catch up on the thing. But anyway, yeah, I think that's it. I think that's really all I want to say. I do want to make a shift, because I forgot to mention this. Andre Leon Talley passed away yesterday. By the time you listen to this, yesterday. And I think I feel two ways about him. I feel like he is a very important legacy that folks should pay attention to. An icon in the Black community and in the Black queer community. Spent a lot of time spotlighting people of color, identifying fashion that the mainstream didn't know was fashion, because, you know, they weren't looking to Black creators and designers to bring forth fashion, right? And so he opened the doors for a lot of people and opened the minds of many to incorporate different ideas of what fashion is. What we know in the latter years of his life, from the late 90s through the end of his life, there was this feeling, and I don't know whether it was true or not, but there was this feeling that he was underappreciated, and that because of his distance from Anna Wintour, he was blackballed from the community. And I actually think I watched a documentary about him. I cannot remember, but indie movie buddy Mon, we watched it together, and I can't remember the exact reason why he was blackballed, other than I think he tried to branch out on his own, and come out from under the shadow of Anna Wintour, I think he alienated, he essentially ended his friendship with Anna and alienated some people in the industry who wanted to curry favor with Anna. And so, as in an essence, he became a blackballed, and he became a pariah, and did not enjoy the same success in the fashion industry that he had enjoyed in the previous decade. So what I'm hearing now, and I don't know, I don't think I have the information to corroborate it, but what I'm hearing is that, and I actually heard this a couple of years ago, that he was near destitute. And I just don't think that that's true, because in the documentary that I saw, he had like a fellowship. He was from the South. I think he was from South Carolina. And he had a home and an art studio, not an art studio, more than an art studio. It was like a gallery. And something like a residency in his hometown, because they recognized him to be the creative genius that he was. So I don't know. I've heard rumors that he might have been destitute. I don't know that to be true. But I definitely see a lot of people, the outpour of sympathy and support and well wishes for his family as they're mourning his passing. And I'm just, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it other than I'm glad that he was given his, well, I don't know that he was given all of his flowers, but I'm glad that we have that documentary about him, which I can't remember the name of it now. I'll probably put it in the show notes when I remember, but you could Google it. Let me Google it. Andre Leon, bam. Oh, I never pegged him as a journalist. I guess he was a journalist. What was the documentary about him? Hold on. Yeah. He was the editor, the Vogue's fashion director. And it's from 1983 to 1987. Its first African-American male creative director. And then its first creative director, black male creative director from 88 to 95. So his career with Vogue spanned a decade and a couple of years. No, more than that. No. So it spanned two decades. He was with Vogue from 83 to 2013. And in 2013, he tried to branch out and it didn't work out for him. Or at least there was a rift between 95 and 98. So, because when the heck did I see? Hold on. Because I got to know. When the heck did I see? Yeah, he was from... No, he was from D.C., but he spent a lot of time in the South, though. He was born in the South. He was born in D.C., but he spent a lot of time in the South, and he passed away in White Plains. Hold on. For some reason, I get the sense that he grew up in the South. Like maybe his family was, you know how it goes, the Great Migration. Maybe he spent a lot of time in the South with his family. But hold on, let me, what the heck was the, there was a documentary that came out, filmography. Oh, he was in the September issue? Oh, it was The Gospel According to Andre Talley. That's what, I've watched that. So watch that. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. It's interesting. He chronicles his whole life, his fallout with Anna Wintour, his success and the journeys to be himself and to accept himself and all of that, even his weight struggles and all of that. So, but yeah, I think, and that was his documentary. He approved that documentary, so go watch that, because that's essentially what he wanted you to know about him. Not what other people wanted you to know about him, but what he wanted you to know. So go watch that. You know, say a prayer for him and his legacy and his family. And yeah. All right, well, that's the show. Feel free to share this with anyone you think might enjoy it. Also, feel free to, you know, leave a review, a positive review, if you feel so inclined. Take care of yourself today and always. Until next time.